KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
North Oakland.
Temescal.
Alamo Square.
I live in Noe Valley.
Corona Heights.
Western Addition.
I live in North Oakland, right by MacArthur BART Station.
Coming up, SFUSD is back in session today. As the kids go back to class, we've got a story about the radical history of early childhood education.
Well, it turns out that the man who invented kindergarten was a crystal scientist.
Learning with toys inspired by nature. Then, regret and reflection in a new story from Solano State Prison.
You serving a life sentence for killing someone that you said you loved so much. How do you deal with that every single day?
Stay tuned. Cross Currents is coming up. Today was the first day of school for kids in the San Francisco Unified School District. Some are going for the first time ever, and for them, it's the beginning of a 12-year journey. It can be exciting, emotional, but did you ever wonder about the history of how little kids learn? Our friends at 99% Invisible explored that in our first story today. Here's host Roman Mars.
Once upon a time, there was a boy named Friedrich Froebel. His early life reads like one of those dark old German fairy tales. His mother died in 1783, right after he was born. And so Friedrich Froebel had a lonely childhood. He spent his days in the woods, looking at trees and rocks and flowers, wandering the dense forests of Thuringia in what was then Prussia.
It's a lush region, sometimes referred to today as das grüne Herz Deutschlands, the green heart of Germany.
That's Kurt Kohlstedt. He produced this story.
I actually lived near Thuringia when I was a kid, and the forests there are einfach zauberhaft, simply magical. And I can really see how Froebel became enthralled.
He looked at rocks, he studied the trees, we worked with a forester for a while, he was an apprentice forester.
That's Norman Brosterman. He's an author who studied Friedrich Froebel for years.
Brosterman says that Froebel worked for a time as a land surveyor and even served in the military. He was skilled at drafting and geometry, and at one point became convinced he should be an architect.
He did everything you need to become an architect. He took all the right classes.
But he didn't become an architect. A friend convinced him to become an educator instead. And in changing course, Froebel arguably ended up having more influence in the world of architecture and design than any single architect.
And that's because Friedrich Froebel created kindergarten.
I believe kindergarten had a tremendous influence on the 20th century. It impacted all parts of society, of course, including art and architecture.
If you've ever looked at a piece of abstract art or modernist architecture and thought, my kindergartner could have made that, well, that may be more true than you realize.
The kindergarten was the product of Froebel's decades of experience in a wide range of fields, but the foundations of it were built on the principles of Johann Pestalozzi.
Pestalozzi is considered the father of modern education, which basically means they will learn better if you treat them well rather than hit them with sticks, you know?
In addition to the whole not hitting kids with sticks thing, Pestalozzi emphasized physical activity and active learning over rote memorization and repetition. And in particular, he felt that kids should draw.
Pestalozzi was an early childhood educator who had incorporated pedagogical drawings in the curriculum.
That's author and Cooper Union professor Tamar Zinger.
And basically, he is one of the first who thought that drawing should be part of any school curriculum and should be taught to the very, very young.
Froebel worked for a time at a school based on these principles, and he built on what he learned from Pestalozzi, incorporating his own ideas along the way about how children should be taught.
Pestalozzi was especially busy with breaking down the two-dimensional world, but what Froebel did is break down the three-dimensional world.
Froebel realized he wanted kids to go beyond just drawing lines on pages. He wanted them to learn through the physical manipulation of objects.
Froebel wanted children to play with toys, objects designed and crafted specifically for educational play. Now, this doesn't sound that unusual today, but it really was back in the early 1800s.
children used to go to work with their parents. They used to sit by their parents' side and they would play with the detritus of the parents' work. I mean, for example, the candle maker would make wax figurines with the leftover wax. The wooden blocks were only made from the leftover wood from the carpenter. So it was always from the leftover material.
Froebel wanted to build real educational intent into objects of play, but it took him decades to come to this key realization, and a lot of time observing children and nature.
He was put in charge of an orphanage for a while, overseeing young children. But he also studied the natural sciences, in particular, the emerging discipline of crystallography.
Well, it turns out that the man who invented kindergarten was a crystal scientist.
He worked with the foremost crystallographer of the time in Berlin.
Where most people saw nature in big, flowing, organic shapes like hills and plants and animals, Froebel zoomed in to study the straight lines and the geometric forms of crystals.
To try to understand how the physical world around him is actually made.
Froebel came to see crystal structures as the building blocks of reality.
And this alchemy of crystals and the teaching of Pestalozzi and a childhood alone in the woods all crystallized into a solid vision. In 1837, when he was 55 years old, Froebel founded the very first kindergarten in Bad Blankenburg, Germany.
And his intention was to create an educational system for children who could not yet read or write. So he thought to use geometric forms as a way to teach complex and simple lessons, all through play. If you can harness play, you can teach kids a lot of things.
The word kindergarten cleverly encompassed two different ideas. Kids would play in and learn from nature, but they would also themselves be nurtured and nourished, like plants in a garden.
And the key to it all was a set of deceptively simple-looking toys.
These were Froebel's gifts.
They're called gifts because they were to draw out the gifts of the children.
In German, of course, the phrase Froebel's gifts is rolled together into a single word, Froebelgaben.
Froebel's gifts were meant to be given in a particular order, the toys growing more complex over time, teaching different lessons about shape, structure, and perception along the way.
The first of Froebel's gifts was a soft knitted ball.
A wool ball. And it's basically the first gift a child could get at the age of 6 weeks.
Then the child would graduate to another ball, roughly the same size as the first.
But this one is not soft, it's hard. A wooden, maple wooden ball. And it has a surface, it is smooth, it can roll. And then they are given the cube, and the cube is an opposite. It has sides, it has edges, it is sharp edges, it has points. The cube cannot roll. Kids are asked to enumerate the differences between the two.
And then they get a cylinder, which combines elements of both the ball and the cube, and it blows their little minds.
Each new gift would get more and more interactive and more complex. Some were designed to be hung from a string and spun in the air.
And as they rotate, some very interesting forms are created that are not visible when the form is stationary.
Like a cube, for instance, looks like a cylinder when you spin it around fast enough.
He wants the children to start to see that there are some invisible parts contained within the visible.
Next up came objects made up of smaller objects, like a cube that breaks down into a bunch of little cubes.
And then the toys would shift from being about perception to being about creation. They would become more versatile, pliant, and constructive. Blocks gave way to paper, string, wire, little sticks and peas that could be connected and stacked into structures.
The objects would get more abstract and creative, leading to the final lesson.
The last is really just working freely with clay.
Clay being the most malleable of all. It's rigid and it's soft. And there's a whole range of things a child could build with it.
But even at this final stage, this wasn't the kind of creative free-for-all we tend to associate with childhood play. Froebel had children sitting at desks, little workstations with grids laid out on them.
So it's not free play. The fact that the table has an underlying grid is very much at the root of the directed play. You follow instructions, and there's an underlying order.
And so in this very structured, very Germanic way, the gifts encourage students to think abstractly and to relate ideas, objects, and symbols.
A set of blocks could be used to teach counting. Then the child could use those same blocks to build a house, and then tell stories of a family living in that house. So they were modeling the world in different ways, all using the same set of objects.
The children realize that they can create new shapes and new forms that they create on top of the gridded table.
These kindergartens weren't just schools. They were art schools, without all the sex and drugs and clove cigarettes. They were places that taught about shape and form and color. And when kindergarten graduates went out into the world changed.
The kind of art that was being made in the 19th century is really different than the kind of art that was made after kids went to kindergarten.
Expressionist, cubist, and surrealist artists like Paul Klee and Vasily Kandinsky attended early kindergartens. Others, like Piet Mondrian, encountered Froebelian methods as teachers. And when you look at a lot of their work alongside illustrations in kindergarten teacher guides, the resemblance is uncanny.
And it wasn't just artists. Kindergarten influenced designers, too.
Walter Gropius started the Bauhaus in 1919. Gropius decided to hire a kindergarten teacher as the first hire of this famous school of design.
So the Bauhaus had its adult design students doing geometric exercises, much like those found in kindergartens.
And the effects of Froebel's work on design education rippled out beyond Germany. And some of his most explicit and direct influences can be found among the world's most famous architects. But Friedrich Froebel only got to witness the spread of his vision for about a decade before it was cut short.
In the 1850s, the Prussian government was cracking down on liberal thought. And in 1851, they issued the Kindergartenverbot, a national ban on kindergartens. And Froebel died the very next year.
And you know, you wonder if he died of a broken heart in 1852. Of course, who knows?
But even though the ban slowed the expansion of kindergartens in Germany, it didn't stop the idea from spreading elsewhere. Far from it. A lot of free-thinking liberals left Germany, and they brought Froebel's kindergarten with them.
So his disciples, they were so dedicated to the work that they immigrated, many of them to the United States. And basically, because of the ban, that's what led to Froebel's theories to be known around the world.
And the most dedicated kindergarten evangelists were women. As Tamara Zinger points out in her book, Architecture and Play, Froebel believed that women should play a leading role in educating children.
To be clear, Froebel wasn't exactly a feminist. He had very traditional ideas about gender roles and believed that it was the role of women to nurture children as nannies and kindergarten teachers.
But regardless of Froebel's reasoning, teaching kindergarten was a rare opportunity.
It was one of the only jobs you could get as a young woman. There weren't many jobs.
And it was women who drew up and translated the lesson books that would be used to teach a generation of young artists and designers. By 1885, there were over 500 kindergartens in America, and they were taught primarily by women.
And you might be thinking, hey, I went to kindergarten. Why didn't I grow up with this incredibly Germanic, immaculately planned sequence of toys? Well, ironically, the passion of some of kindergarten's biggest proponents is part of the reason why you probably didn't grow up playing with Froebel's gifts. The first kindergarten in the United States started in Watertown, Wisconsin in 1856, but it was German language only. The educator Elizabeth Peabody was inspired by this kindergarten and went on to found the first American English language kindergarten in Boston in 1860.
Peabody wanted to spread the teachings of Froebel to as many children as possible, and so she reached out to Milton Bradley, the famous board game maker. She wanted Bradley to mass-produce Froebel's gifts so that he could be accessible to everyone.
And Milton Bradley, having heard her, was convinced. And since that moment, it turned his entire attention to the manufacture of Froebel blocks and gifts.
But where Peabody saw an educational ideal, Bradley saw a business opportunity.
Bradley began adding a bunch of new toys into the mix. And then other manufacturers got in on the game too, making all different kinds of stuff and just calling it all kindergarten toys.
he just made up stuff and he said, this is kindergarten, this is kindergarten, this is kindergarten. It's not necessarily Froebel's kindergarten.
The simple abstractions of Froebel's gifts had gone commercial.
And within a few years, Elizabeth Peabody went from promoting the manufacture of kindergarten toys to speaking out against it.
The interest of manufacturers and of merchants of the gifts and materials is a snare. It has already corrupted the simplicity of Froebel in Europe and America, for his idea was to use elementary forms exclusively and simple materials.
Even the word kindergarten itself became a generic term, a catch-all for early childhood education of all different kinds.
These days, most kindergartens are a lot different from anything Froebel imagined, and few kids encounter those early gifts in any kind of sequence, if at all. But kids still play with blocks.
I mean, I really think that it's because of Froebel, or however it's correctly pronounced, that children in the Western world play with blocks. But I think also blocks are constant across a variety of educational systems because there's so much in them that they can teach.
That's Alexandra Lang, an architecture critic and author of The Design of Childhood, How the Material World Shapes Independent Kids.
Tinker Toys and Lego and Kinects, they're all about understanding shape and form and making connections. But they also represent a departure from Froebel's highly organized and linear approach.
You know, the Froebel blocks, you were supposed to proceed from 1 to 20 through his exercises, whereas the unit blocks are much more open-ended. They're more like we tend to encounter blocks today.
These days, we don't think that blocks need an accompanying gridded desk or a syllabus of objects. Now blocks are creative tools for children that give them a chance to use their imagination as they build houses and cities and interact with each other. That's what I see when my boys play with Legos or build castles in Minecraft.
There isn't this sense of strict progression. It's more a sense that these blocks are a tool for children to recreate their own world as best they can.
And who knows how many architects, builders, designers, and thinkers all started with these literal building blocks, Froebelian or otherwise, learning creativity through construction.
That story was produced by the team at 99% Invisible and edited for Cross Currents. You can hear the full story about Froebel and how his ideas also influenced how children play outdoors. That's at 99%invisible.org. And with school back in session, tomorrow we're dedicating our whole show to understanding the history behind a controversial mural at George Washington High School.
We participated in good faith and believe there was honesty and integrity in your process. But here we are with the all too familiar feeling of broken promises.
After a final decision from SFUSD, we'll hear how people on both sides are feeling about the mural's future tomorrow at 5. This is Cross Currents. I'm Henat Baba. Next, we have a story from Uncuffed, our series recorded and edited by men incarcerated at Solano State Prison in Vacaville.
This is Uncuffed.
Stories from Solano State Prison.
Today's story comes from Uncuffed producer Brian Thames. And just a warning, this interview does contain descriptions of violence. Here's Brian.
What if you loved two people so passionately, but had to choose one over the other? Love doesn't hurt. It's the choices we make that sometimes hurt us.
My name is Roderick Clay Hall, and I'm 59 years old.
Have you been to prison before?
Never.
So, you're a caretaker. You took care of your grandmother?
Correct.
And you also took care of your brother?
Correct.
Is this an older brother, younger brother?
He's a younger brother. My brother was 5 years younger than me.
What was your relationship like with your brother just growing up, just as two brothers, knowing that there was something, quote unquote, wrong?
My brother was my best friend.
Okay. How so?
He was, oh man, if somebody did something to me, it's gonna do something to him. If somebody did something to him, they've got to do something to me.
What did you notice, if anything, or your brother may have behaved or acted differently? I mean, at any point in his young life, not his adult life, but his young life when you guys were growing up.
Even growing up, when he was in elementary school, it was always like if he came home and he had a problem at school, he would tell my mother, you know, they don't like me, they hate me. You know, he always had this negativity about him on how he felt people felt about him. At one point, my brother jumped on me. And he told me it was because I used his Noxzema. Because we were just sitting there having a conversation. And then all of a sudden, he just flipped. And I'll never forget it. After he did it, he ran out the house, into my grandmother's house, out of her house, and he just started laughing. He had mental issues, but he was a good person.
How did it come about that you had become a caretaker for your grandmother and your brother? Tell me about that.
When my brother came home, my grandmother was like 88. So, and I lived with her, and my grandmother had asthma and a lot of other ailments, but somebody had to look after her every day. I would get up, make her breakfast, make her dinner, and I'd get her situated where she could sit and look at her soap operas or whatever she wanted to look at on TV all day. When my brother came home, he had to have a place to stay. So, what I really wanted to do with him was I let him move into the room in my grandmother's house, and I told him, if you help take care of her, anything you need, I'm gonna sleep next door with a duplex, and I'll sleep next door, and you just do what you have to do, and whatever you need, I'll step in and do it. You know, if somewhere you need to go or something you need to do, I got you.
So you were still being that big brother?
Oh, I'm always gonna be his big brother.
Why are you in prison? What are you convicted of?
I shot my brother. I shot him in his arm. They say it ricocheted off a bone in his bicep, went through his chest, and through his heart and lung.
And what happened?
I killed him.
How'd that come about, Rod?
I shot him one time.
Why?
He was gonna stab my grandmother. He had a butcher knife. He wouldn't put the knife down. I shot him.
Let me get some toilet paper or a napkin.
No, I got some.
You got some?
I got some here.
You sure?
I got some. Yeah, I'm
straight. All right, come on.
I'm straight. Get my head together.
What made you think that your brother was going to stab your grandmother?
Because he wouldn't put the knife down. I kept telling him.
You mind if I go back again?
No.
Okay, I keep thinking, because we've talked before. Your brother had mental illnesses. Was there anything else you could have done besides shooting him?
I said, you're not going to stab her. Let's just leave and we'll come back later. He wasn't trying to hear that. He's
like, why didn't you call the police?
I had a warrant out on me for not going back to Alabama. And I didn't want to call the police because they would have arrested me right there.
By the way, what were you sentenced to?
40 years to life.
You're serving a life sentence for killing someone that you said you loved so much. How do you deal with that every single day?
I live with this rest of my life. I would never get over it. He was truly my best friend. I never hated him. I just didn't want him to hurt her.
That was Roderick Hall speaking with Uncuffed producer Brian Thames. In Roderick's trial, the jury rejected his claim that he acted to defend his grandmother. KALW's work in prisons is supported by the California Arts Council and the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. The producers fact-check content to the best of their ability, and all content is approved by an information officer. You can listen to more stories from Uncuffed at our website, kalw.org/Uncuffed. And while you're there, make sure you're subscribed to the Cross Currents newsletter to get all our stories and interviews in your inbox each week.
Last night I dreamt you left me on a boat long and tall. I stared into your eyes, I didn't know you at all. The captain rang the bell, bringing everyone around. Watch my heart breaking as you drifted out of town.
This music is by Dave Ricketts and Friends from San Francisco. They're performing at the Sea Star tomorrow night.
Next night I dreamt you kissed me on a bicycle for two, saying how you missed me. I confessed I missed you too.
Today's Cross Currents team includes Janae Darden, Manolo Morales, True Gwynn, Jessica Placek, Andrew Seltzer, and Eli Wirtschafter. Our engineers are James Rollins, Tariq Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shirin Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.